Good afternoon. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly time together. The bosun's mate of the watch has piped officer's call, all hands to quarters, and that's where we are. And today, it is my pleasure to be able to introduce Vice Admiral Sandra Stowes, who has written a book called Breaking Ice and Breaking Glass. And Admiral, just to make sure that I have you on the board, would you give the greetings of the day to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world?
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Captain Joe and all Captain Joe's people. I'm honored to be here with you today.
So I know that you are calling in, and you're calling in from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And so we're going to have my usual introductory remarks and the binnacle list, and then I'm going to start with Admiral Stowes and her book, which I have to say, I've got a copy of it right here in front of me so that we can talk a little bit about it with some authority. It has a lovely photograph of the Admiral peering in over the horizon, and I always like that. I always like that we are looking out over the horizon, lookouts posted as far forward in the eyes of the ship as is practicable, as are said in the rules of the road, or now we call them the coal regs, but the rules of the road which go back to Phoenician times. And so the Admiral is pictured, and in the background is a photograph of the Coast Guard cutter Polar Star. And Admiral Stowes, as a junior officer, sailed in Polar Star, and we're going to talk about that. Before we do that, my greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, on the other. And in particular today, do I send greetings to the readers of the little island newspaper called The Beachcomber. And I do that in particular today because I'd wanted to get Liz Shepherd, who is the editor of The Beachcomber, to come on with me at some future broadcast. And she said, Captain Joe, I can't do it because Tuesday is my publication day. That's the day I go to press. And there's no way that I can get away from the office on Tuesday. And then it became clear to me that Liz is not only the editor, but she is also the author of just about every piece that is in the Beachcomber, and that's because she desperately needs a reporter. And so, Admiral, if you don't have anything better to do, the kind of person that Liz is looking for as a reporter would be people like you and me, people who are already fully funded, people who have some ability in writing and in speaking. So if you find yourself without a place to live and a job, you can come to the magical Isle of Vashon and go work for Liz Shepherd. What do you think about that, Admiral?
I love Seattle and love Vashon Island. So if my travels take me out there, I'll be sure to stop by.
Okay, good. And so anyone who is listening and who lives on the magical Isle of Vashon would and who feels that they are ready to take on a little bit of very lowly paid employment, Liz Shepherd at the Beachcomber desperately needs some help, and I'm endorsing that particular need and that particular request. On the binnacle list, it is a sad one for me today because in the last few days, my friend Bernie, who lives across the sound from me, crossed his own bar a couple of days ago, and I had been able to be with Bernie and his lovely family for the 2 days before his death. And he was one of those people who did indeed keep his oath that all of us took. The Admiral and I took exactly the same oath on the parade ground at New London in the Coast Guard Academy. And Bernie was, when he left the service and go back to the outside, he was a second-class radioman, and he had served and sailed in Storrs when Storrs made the first circumnavigation of the North American continent in 1957. So it was my privilege to get to know him at a reunion of Storrs, Bramble, and Spar, all of the ships that had made that circumnavigation in 2021 up in the Great Lakes with our friend John, so who had put that together. So it was a privilege to me to be able to help Bernie as he made that same voyage that all of us must make at one time or another, sooner, hopefully later, for all of us. And so now, Admiral, we're going to get to breaking ice and breaking glass. Would you tell all of us, first of all, a little bit about yourself, the Academy class that you of which you are a graduate, and then, in particular, the way that you developed the title of your book, and a little bit about the book itself before I ask you some specific questions about it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on and for the opportunity to share a little bit about my story. And I'm sorry for your loss on the binnacle list. That's always a sad thing. And we all come to the time where we have to cross the bar. But this is not the day for us. This is the day to tell stories. So I was born and raised in Ellicott City, Maryland in 1960 as the oldest of four kids. I was the only girl, so I had three younger brothers. And that's relevant because when I ended up going off to the Coast Guard Academy and entering in 1978, I entered with a third class to have women up until 1976 when the first class of with women entered. It was for men only, and all the service academies were that way. But I had had a chance in high school to benefit from Title IX, which was equal opportunity in education and sports for girls and women, and then the Equal Rights Amendment, and then shortly thereafter, in 1975, the National Defense Authorization Act required all the service academies to open their doors to women. So I ended up being amongst the first women to enter. And when I was a cadet, there were only 5% women in the Corps of Cadets of about 1,000 cadets. I graduated in 1982, and my first assignment was on board the Coast Guard Icebreaker Glacier in Long Beach, California. And I served for a deep freeze on board her. I think Captain Joe is going to ask me more about that later. Cross-decked over to the Polar Star once the glacier returned from deep freeze, went into a major maintenance availability for repairs. And I served on board Polar Star out of Seattle, Washington for 2 years. And eventually went back to Coast Guard headquarters in Washington, D.C. after 6 years at sea. So that was unusual for an officer to spend 6 years in a row at sea. I didn't know anything else. So when I went back to sea, back from sea to Coast Guard headquarters, I thought, oh, my gosh, my career is surely over. My detailer had said, you're going to get orders to the Coast Guard Icebreaker Acquisition Project back in headquarters. So I was happy to be staying with icebreakers, but sad to be leaving sea duty. And while I was at sea, I had been the first woman ever on board the Polar Star and the only woman for a while with a crew of 150. After that, I reported to the Clover in Eureka, California, which was a medium endurance cutter at the time. And I was the first and only woman to serve on board the Clover. I was operations officer. So this whole string of being the first and being on icebreakers matters, because when I got to headquarters, I very shortly found myself swept away up to the Secretary of Transportation's office, and the Coast Guard was part of transportation in those days. Up until 9/11, when we had the terrorist attacks, the Coast Guard was in transportation, then was moved over to become part of the new Department of Homeland Security. So I was serving Secretary of Transportation Sam Skinner as his military aide, having quickly transferred from headquarters up to that job. And I felt, I went from feeling like my career was over to feeling like my career was skyrocketing. Just so lucky. I felt this whole overwhelming sense of gratitude for having been selected to serve in this role as a military aide, where I got a chance to see the U.S. government from the top down. I could see where the Coast Guard fit as one of many agencies in Transportation Department, and Transportation, the Cabinet Department, as one of many Cabinet Departments in the U.S. government. So I got a broad perspective and was very grateful for that and for the Secretary's opportunities that he gave me to grow and learn as a leader, even though I was really junior. And so one day I was talking to one of my friends who was one of the advanced people for Secretary Skinner, and her name was Shane, and she planned his trips and made sure everything was all set. So I said to her one day, Shane, we are so lucky. We're serving Secretary Skinner. He's giving us all these opportunities. I'm going to write a book one day to give back all the lessons I'm learning and help other people through my stories and experiences. And she looked at me and said, Sandy, you're going to call that book Breaking Ice and Breaking Glass. And she knew that I'd been one of the first women and most of the jobs I've been in, and I've been on icebreakers. So I thought it was an incredibly catchy title, and I stuck by it. That was in 1989 that she gave me that idea. And then 30 some odd years later, when I retired, I wrote that book, and it's called Breaking Ice and Breaking Glass, Leading in Uncharted Waters, just like my friend Shane told me it had to be titled. And it is designed to give back leadership lessons learned over my 40 years in uniform to help other people become the best that they can be, to become the leaders of character that they can be, to achieve their full potential, like I was given the opportunities to do. And all my proceeds from this book are donated to the Coast Guard Academy's Institute for Leadership to support the next generation of young leaders of character. So I'm doing this as a way to give back, not to make a business out of it. And those who want a signed copy can go to my website. It's www.sandrastowes.com. And there's a contact area at the bottom of each page of the webpage where you can email me. You can email me and ask for a copy of the book, and I'll get back to you and we can work out details. I'll sign a book and you can send me a check or Venmo or PayPal, and we'll have a book in your hands and help you become a better leader or help you to mentor somebody under your watch. And thank you very much, Captain Joe. I'll leave it there for now.
So that everybody is clear, your surname is spelled Stosz. And what is the ethnic origin of that name, Admiral?
That's German.
And for people who are familiar with the Washington, D.C. area, Ellicott City is not very far from Baltimore. And in Baltimore is the Coast Guard Yard. And when I was captain in Northwind, I started out as the yard as my home port. So, Admiral, let's go back to your book for just a minute. I'm not going to say it is over long, but it is of a substantial size. And yet, there are a couple of leadership principles that all of us who have had the privilege of commanding Coast Guard sailors over the years have followed, and we may not have articulated them. So I did not preload you with this question, but I suspect that you are pretty nimble on your feet. And so if you would distill, what are a couple of leadership principles that you would, if you were to stand up in front of a class at the academy and you hold up a copy of your book with the lovely photograph of you and Polar Star on the front of it and say, okay, here is cadets, carry on. You get to sit down now. I hope that they still snap too when somebody comes into a room who is in authority. And carry on. And now in this entire book, in a few words, here are the things that I would say to you. So what would those words be?
There's a lot of vignettes in the book, and the one I would pick for a young audience would be my three P's of power, because I learned that at a young age when I was an ensign, which means the most junior leader on the totem pole, right out of the Coast Guard Academy, and I reported to the glacier, and within a few months, you know, we're on our way down to Antarctica, and I'm trying to learn my job, qualify as a watch stander, and also supervise people and enlisted people for the first time, because at the Coast Guard Academy, you're in a training environment. And I was supervising a young fireman who was on a punishment detail. We used to call it extra military instruction, or EMI. And he wasn't interested in doing what I told him. So I went to my boss, who was the operations officer, and it was Dale Thompson, who some of you might know, mm-hmm. lieutenant at the time.
Yeah.
And I said to him, Dale, I said, I'm trying to get this fireman to do work, and I can't, do you have any hints for me on how to compel him to comply? And Lieutenant Thompson looked at me and said, Sandy, there's three kinds of power, personal power, professional power, and position power. And if you're going to succeed in this Coast Guard, you're going to have to learn to lean on the first two and use the last, position power, only as a last resort. And so I never forgot that. Personal power, that is your emotional intelligence, your ability to relate to people, how you come across. Your professional power is your military bearing, how you present yourself, your knowledge, your work ethic. And then position power is just your position, nothing more to it than that. And I found that over the years, by focusing on personal power and professional power, I could motivate and inspire people to want to do their jobs versus just saying, hey, I'm the ensign on duty and you're supposed to do this job, do it. So I really learned a lot by that. It helped make me humble. It helped make me try to build trust and earn respect every day of my life, no matter how senior I got. And even as an admiral, I remembered that even more, because the higher up you go, the more you can fall victim of this. You know, everyone's doing what they can for you. You can take your position for granted and just presume that you've got trust and respect because you're senior. It's not true. You have to work hard to build trust and earn respect every day. So that's what I learned from Lieutenant Dale Thompson as an ensign, and it's a valuable lesson for any young person starting out today.
So because this is, we don't have that much time with you, I'm going to forego putting out my own rules of leadership and command. But I want to take us to Polar Star. And in particular, do I want to take us to Polar Star because your captain in Polar Star was a classmate of mine, Captain Joe Smith. And Captain Smith and I never served together until he became one of my icebreaker captains when I was the ice boss for Admiral Gracie and Admiral Venske. So I want to take you and all of our listeners today to Polar Star and to Captain Smith, and I'd like you to characterize your relationship with him, and in particular, his style, which was a little bit rough around the edges. Captain Smith was a former Navy enlisted man before he earned an appointment to the Coast Guard Academy. He was the oldest man in my academy class. I was one of the youngest. and I miss Captain Smith as a friend, as a classmate, and as a brother, icebreaker captain, every time I get to talk about him. So now it's your turn to talk about him, because I'm aware that there are some things that you learned from him. And Admiral, it's your turn to talk about Captain Joe Smith.
All right. So the year was 1983, and I had cross-decked over from the glacier to the Polar Star. I was the first and only woman out of a crew of 150 on the Polar Star. And Captain Smith was the commanding officer, and Captain Bob Hammond was the executive officer. And I feel so fortunate. Once again, I've got an attitude of gratefulness when I look back on my career for all the opportunities given me, because Captain Smith welcomed me as one of the crew without ever, I never had to feel like I was different because I was a woman or I was treated differently. I was treated as an ensign coming in. I already had my qualifications from spending a whole deep freeze in Antarctica. So I believe I was a value-added junior officer to them, fully qualified. And Captain Smith took me under his arm, and I really felt like, you know, I was only 23, so he was a father figure to me. And yeah, he was a little rough and gruff, but I like that. I mean, that's what sailors are. Why change that, right? And so what Captain Smith did was they had also just finished the deep freeze. We were down there in Antarctica together, the glacier and the polar star. So when I reported aboard, Captain Smith was giving his crew a reward. And what he did for a reward was to have a dependence cruise from Seattle to Juneau up the Inland Passage. And dependents could ride on board from Seattle up to Juneau, get off at Juneau, go back home, or they could meet the ship in Juneau, come all the way down, or they could do a round trip. And I thought that was just amazing. And so I had my mother meet us in Juneau, and a lot of people had parents and friends and spouses come on board. And Captain Smith, I remember him, the Inland Passage for a big ship, like 400 feet, there's a place called Wrangell Narrows that is narrow. And I remember navigating through there, and it's scary. And Captain Smith, he never batted an eye. He had trust in his people. He was calm, cool, and collected, experienced. Nothing ruffled him. And he was a great role model for me, because when things got tense, he wasn't. But yet he was fully in command presence. So I really respected Captain Smith. And sadly, he had a change of command after that, so I only got to sail with him for a month. But another funny story was, before he got relieved, we had a visit by the Secretary of Transportation, who had been, who was before I was up there serving Secretary Skinner, so it was Secretary Elizabeth Dole. She made us a trip out and doing a unit visit, because we were in transportation at the time, and she stepped on board that brow to come aboard. And she had high heels on, and she had her foot stuck firmly in, and Captain Smith is waiting to salute her at the other end of the brow. Meanwhile, she's got her foot, there's sideboys lined up, she's got her foot stuck, that long high heel stuck in the grate of the brow, and one of the ensigns reached down to grab her ankle and try to wiggle her foot out. It was just uproariously funny. Everybody is trying not to laugh. It's the most solemn occasion. You're trying to bring aboard a senior dignitary, so Captain Smith, he was there waiting for her and professional through the whole thing. But sometimes it's good to have these humorous stories amongst all the sea stories that we have that are a little bit more about big waves and rough seas. So that's my experience with Captain Smith, a leader of character and a man I was honored to serve under.
So you were fortunate also that his XO was Commander Hammond. And what you may not know, or maybe you do know, is that he is a Coast Guard junior, and that his father was a flag officer in the Coast Guard. He was a brown shoe. And and I knew him because I knew his dad, because he was at the academy when I was a cadet. And so in the time that you and I had while we were waiting for the one bell of the afternoon watch to appear was that I had told you how we're all of us interconnected, and how much interconnection there is, particularly in the polar community, and how so many people that you and I have connections that are not even apparent. And we only have a few minutes left, but I want to take us now from Polar Star to Reliance. And you and I both have been captain in Reliance. And so my first question to you, Admiral, is that when you relieved Reliance, Did she still have the captain's chair that I brought to her from Unimac?
Captain Joe, I'm not sure if it was the exact same chair that you brought from Unimac. It was a great chair. There was definitely a nice elevated captain's chair there that I spent many an hour occupying in the 2 years I was in command post 9/11. So I don't know if it was the same chair.
Well, I am certain when you say that it's elevated that it was the same chair, because when I was captain in Unimac, it was necessary to replace the raggy-taggy captain's chair that was on her bridge. And so my supply officer in Unimac said, "Captain Joe, I think that we ought to buy you one of those chairs that goes up on the for the Airbus in an aircraft carrier." And I said, "By all means." And so when I cross-decked from Unimac to Reliance, and therein lieth the tale, which we don't have time to get into here. But when I went to Reliance, I took the chair with me, and I loaded all of my people that I was going to be able to keep from Unimac into a C-130, and we flew down to Pensacola, which is where Reliance was home-ported at the time. And when the C-130 landed in Pensacola, my new XO, I was not able to keep my own XO from Unimac. And so my new XO had the crew drawn up on the tarmac at NAS Pensacola, and the ramp of the C-130 dropped down. And I was preceded by an officer of the deck carrying a long glass. And then I marched out, and then behind me was an MK-1 or MK-2 and a couple of other guys carrying the captain's chair. And this was the metaphor that I decided to use to symbolize to my crew that I was putting together that we were moving from Pensacola to Yorktown. We were going to be the reserve training ship, and we were going to have a crew that worked together, that in which, as I always said in all of my command changes of command, that in my ships there is no whining, mewling, nor puking. Well, there is, of course, some puking for those who do not quite get ready to get over the seasickness. Admiral, we have only a couple of minutes. I want to give you not the last word, because that's always mine from the captain's chair, but to tell you how much I have enjoyed telling these stories, and we have a lot more to go. And so I would like to extend the invitation for you to once again pull over into a rest stop somewhere in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and join me yet once again from the captain's chair on a time downstream. But now it's your turn, Admiral, to send us on our way, and then I will give my last words. So, Admiral, you have a minute to tell us those things that we need to know from breaking ice and breaking glass, and I hope that you will accept the invitation to come on with me again.
Captain Joe, I'd be happy to accept the invitation to join you again at some point. I love to tell sea stories. I like to try to make them relevant to the people who need to develop as leaders of character and those who mentor them. So my book is targeted towards younger people, but also people who are older who have other younger people under their watch, under their supervision. So I believe that we should all strive to become our very best. I believe that senior people and junior people alike should reach out their hands to meet others where they are. And it's not going to be the same place where you're sitting. So if you're a senior person, reach out your hand to meet some junior person where they are and help bring them up to where you want them to be. If you're a junior person, don't sit back and wait to be invited. Reach your hand out and ask for a mentor. Ask questions so you can learn and develop and grow and be part of the civil society, whether it's at work or at home or in your community, and lean in and be active and engaged. So I'll leave it at that. I know our time is coming, but everybody should spend some time every day thinking about how they can become a better leader and a better person. Thank you very much, Captain Joe.
And Admiral Stotes, thank you for being with me. We will foregather you and I sometime in the not-too-distant future from the captain's chair. And this is, as always, your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And I remain, as always, up in the captain's chair. All of you are in the palm of my hand. And this is your captain, always on station and watching properly.